Welcome to Author Stories, the podcast where we talk to the best writers in the industry and discuss writing and the creative process. Whether you are a writer, a reader, or both, we hope you'll find something here that makes you love books and the writers that create them. You can find archives of all of the great conversations I've had with authors over the years at hankgarner.com. Take some time and browse around there. I'm sure you'll find a new author to love, find inspiration for your own creative life, and find a new story to get lost in. As always, we bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, my guest is Kendara Blake, making her third appearance on Author Stories to talk about her new book, Five Dark Fates, which brings the Three Dark Crowns series of books to an end. And we talk all about landing a massive fantasy series like this. It's a really great interview. Before we get into our interview with Kendara, let's thank some sponsors who make the show possible. The Unwelcome Trilogy by R.D. Brady, Survivor, Mother, Leader, and Humanity's Last Chance. Deep within the remnants of the United States, Lila Richards oversees a camp of 200 survivors. In a world where living is an everyday struggle, and only through banding together can people survive, the arrival of the unwelcome only made her job harder. Riley Quinn and Miles Jones have been raised by Lila for the last 5 years. They're also one of the cursed, the children between the ages of 13 and 18, whom the unwelcome kill on sight. No questions, no pleas, just death. Protecting one another and the people of their camp is ingrained in all of them. But now each of them faces increased danger as the reason why the cursed have been targeted by the unwelcome slowly comes to light. And that truth will shock them to their core. Now time is running out, not just for the cursed who are being hunted down by the unwelcome, not just for Lila and her family who will face the greatest challenge yet, but for all of humanity. The world changed radically 35 years ago, but today humanity's very existence is on the line, and the fight has begun that will ensure its future or its annihilation. Fans of A.G. Riddle, James Rollins, Suzanne Collins, and Brandon Sanderson will love the Unwelcome Trilogy. Pick up your copy of the Unwelcome Trilogy on Amazon today. Edge of Valor, a military sci-fi thriller by Josh Hayes. When their mission fails, his begins. David Weber calls it a tour de force. Special Agent Jackson Fisher is a man after truth. When a military operation to extract a high-ranking ambassador from the war-torn border world of Stonemaier ends in disaster, Fisher is called in to investigate. A whole platoon went in, but only three Alliance Marines returned home. The rest killed in action along with hundreds of civilians. With tensions between the Holloman Alliance and Stonemaier rising, Fisher attempts to stitch the pieces together. One thing becomes more and more certain. The surviving Marines are lying. As the truth unfurls, Fisher begins to realize this was far more than a simple rescue mission, and that the truth might be something best left buried. Filled with action, mystery, and well-crafted characters, Edge of Valor, the Valor series book one, will put you into a world of war, conspiracy, and betrayal. It's perfect for fans of David Weber's Honorverse or Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan with a futuristic flair. That's Edge of Valor by Josh Hayes. R.J. Pinero and his brand new book, Chilling Effect, a global climate thriller. A ruthless eco-terrorist, a woman determined to stop him. Chilling Effect, R.J. Pinero's newest thriller, explores a world in the not-too-distant future where terrorism is taken to a new level, one with world-ending consequences. You never know what you're capable of until the monster inside of you pushes you beyond your moral line in the sand. These are the opening thoughts of former climatologist William Christed as he prepares to attack our delicate ecosystem. He's hell-bent on avenging his father's death and will go to extremes of terrorism never before seen, all to strike a blow to those whose hubris led to his father's demise. He will take full advantage of the greed and narcissism ever present in the world, as well as the fragility of our planet to ecological terrorism, and use it to plot a scenario so grim, yet so compellingly real, it could have ripped from today's headlines. Check out the brand new thriller Chilling Effect from R.J. Pinero. Michael Anderle has a brand new series that's launching. It's called Opus X, and the first book is Obsidian Detective, two rebels whose worlds collide on a planetary level. On the fringes of human space, a murder will light a fuse and send two different people colliding together. She lives on Earth, where peace among the population is a given. He is on the fringe of society, where authority is how much power you wield. She's from the powerful, the elite. He's with the military. Both want the truth, but is revealing the truth good for society? Check out Obsidian Detective, the very first book that's up for pre-order now, from the new series Opus X by Michael Anderle. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm super excited to have Kendara Blake back on the show with us. We have kind of followed this series that she's been writing, the Three Dark Crown series, as they've come out, and had some great conversations about it. About 2 weeks ago, or almost 3 weeks ago, I guess when you're hearing this, the last book in the series, Five Dark Fates, came out, and it's really resonating with audiences. And happy to talk about it today. Welcome back to the show, Kendara.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. What is this? Like the
This is our third time, I think, to wow. Chat. Yeah. So great. Yeah, the first time was like episode 245, and then last year was 455, and then this show is going to be like 730 something. So
oh my gosh. Yeah. Are you going to do something really special for your 1,000th show?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. It's, you know, we keep kind of having these milestones, and they're fun, but I don't know what to do anymore.
Yeah. So,
you're like, yay, another show. But congratulations on the new book and closing out this series. How does that feel?
Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm really depressed. I really love this series, and I really enjoyed writing it and working in the world and with the characters. So it's it's very bittersweet. Like I'm glad, I'm happy to see everybody reading the ending and finding out how everything turns out. But at the same time, it's like endings are inherently sad if you like a thing, because then there's no more of that thing, and that's where I am right now.
Yeah, I can only imagine to finally put the bookend literally on that series and to close out these characters' journey is a tough thing. Some people like to wait until a series is completely finished before they dig into it, and I understand that. You know, we've all been really invested in a series before, and you know, it winds up going longer than anticipated. So some people will just now be digging into the series. Let's recap just a little bit. The idea, I still love that kind of kernel idea of where the story came from. It started with like a ball of bees, didn't it?
Yeah. So the Three Dark Crown series is set on a matriarchal island. And on this island, it's very isolated. It's actually separated from the rest of the world by a magical barrier of mist. And people on the island can have a number of different magical gifts. On the island, it is ruled by a queen. And in every generation, the queen gives birth to triplet baby queens. And each of those queens has a different magical gift. But unfortunately for them, when they turn 16, they just have to, you know, murder the crap out of each other to find out who gets to be the new queen of the island. That's just how it works. That is their tradition. That is how it's always been. And I got the idea from, like you said, a ball of bees. It was in 2013, and it was at a book event, actually. And there was a ball of bees very nearby the bookstore, and everybody was afraid of it. Because it's bees, like thousands of bees stuck together in a formation looking very, you know, full of stingers. So there happened to be a beekeeper there, and she said, which I found weird, right? Like that there just happened to be a beekeeper there. It was the first time I'd ever run into one. So she told us not to worry, that when bees form a big, dense ball like that, they're swarming because they're moving to a new hive, and they've got their queen in the center of that ball to protect her. So as long as we didn't annoy the ball, we would have been fine. And I was so fascinated by this idea that I asked this poor beekeeper, question upon question about all the bee knowledge I was never going to have access to again. It's fine. We're actually kind of friends now. She lives in North Carolina. But she told me that, amongst other things, she told me that when a queen bee leaves her old hive, she will lay 4 or 5 baby queen eggs. And when the baby queen bees hatch out, they sting each other to death. And whichever one survives gets to take over the old hive. And as I was driving home from that book event, I just really wanted to do that to people. And that's the day. Like, to the day, that is when I started working on Three Dark Crowns.
That is amazing. On the surface, when you start talking about this matriarchal society, you think, "Oh, how progressive! This is going to be a really fun take on this fantasy society." And then you start, looking at the heirs have to murder each other to see. Do you ever get feedback from people like Kendara? Why are you so cruel to these characters? And what couldn't they work together? Why do they have to murder each other?
Well, if they worked together, there wouldn't be much of a story, All the great stories of monarchies are like when they're really going at it, Well, there's a reason why we know about all the wives of Henry VIII, not because they were also happy in great marriages with lots of children. It's because, half of them lost their heads. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, as the series has progressed, of course, you become attached to the characters, and you just, even me as the writer, I just wish that they could all link hands and stand together. But doesn't always work like that.
But alas, it is not to be.
Yeah, there was going against them.
In the beginning, did you originally foresee this as a trilogy?
No, I thought it was a duet. A duo. So we sold the first books, just Three Dark Crowns and One Dark Throne. And it wasn't until after One Dark Throne was finished that they asked me what I wanted to do next. And I realized that I wasn't ready to leave the island yet. And apparently I'm still not. But I just kept thinking about, what those girls were up to and what was happening with the survivors. And I mentioned that, and they're like, yes. And I'm like, oh, good. Yay. So we plotted out a few. Well, no, I shouldn't say we plotted out a few more books. I loosely said maybe the books could be something like this. And then they said, cool, because I'm not a plotter. I never know what's going to happen.
Nice. Well, it began as a duo. The final series, as this is the last book in this run, is four novels and then also some novellas that fill in some of the gaps. As you start working on this and the world and the story starts expanding, is that a difficult thing to start to keep track of that, you originally saw it as this? But now it's growing and growing. How do you manage it, especially since you said that you're not a plotter and that you're discovering the story as you go? How do you rein that in to keep a hold on it?
Oh, I don't. I'm not a plotter, but getting to do these last two books was very rewarding because it did allow me to discover other facets of the island that I hadn't delved into yet. There are five gifts on the island, and at the completion of One Dark Throne, book two, I'd really only explored three of them to my liking. I hadn't gotten to the rarer ones, the war gift for the warriors and the sight gift, the oracles. It wasn't until books three and four that I got to go to their cities and learn more about their culture. And I'm so glad that I did because the war gifted people ended up being some of my favorite ones to write about.
In the book four, Five Dark Fates, which is out now, Queen Catherine is reigning. Did you foresee from the beginning who would be kind of the dominant force and how the politics of this would start to play out?
No, I knew their situation. I like to start with a situation and a firm grasp of the situation. So I knew who the characters were. I knew these three girls. Arsinoe raised as a naturalist, Catarine raised as a poisoner, Mirabella raised as an elemental and also shepherded by the church. I knew who their families were and who was powerful and who was less powerful. I knew that the last three queens to reign on this island had been poisoners, so that the poisoner family who raised Catherine were extremely strong and very Lannistery by that point. But I didn't know my joy is as a writer is just throwing characters in rooms together and seeing what happens. So I had these groups of people, and they all had different aims and they all had different goals, different strengths, different weaknesses, and I couldn't wait for them to just mix it up together and evolve over the course of the series. The girls very much start out as powerless pawns, despite being queens and despite being the ones who will eventually rule. They are guided and controlled by the families who have raised them. And to see them, really come into their own over the series was nice. But I didn't know that Kat was going to get the crown until like 4 or 5 chapters before she actually got it, when I was like, wow, she's really going for it. I think she might pull it off.
What are some of the fun things about playing with magic systems and religious systems? One sister is controlled by the church, and we see a lot of overlap in those things there. What's some of the fun things about dealing with stuff like that in a fantasy series?
Well, I mean, you do ten. You can make up your own rules, but I mean, the rules have to make sense. I love pitting, and I really loved pitting two really powerful women against each other. The head of the church is a priestess named Luca, and she is older and very wise and very devious, even though she wears a kind face. And the matriarch of the poisoners is Natalia, and she is, extremely, extremely assertive, very, very, very strong-minded. So it was nice to just see those two. The church obviously wants the elemental queen. They don't want another poisoner on because the poisoners have asserted too much power. The ruling family used to share power with the church, and after three reigns, the poisoners have pretty much just shoved the church to the side. So when the church is supposed to remain neutral, but when they find out how strong Mirabella is, they back her and they see it as their opportunity to regain foothold for the island's spirituality, which of course they think is very important, and the poisoners think is not important at all. So yeah, it was a lot of fun to work with that, and also to get to know the different magical systems and the different magical cultures. I didn't know what the world of the warriors would be like. And it turned like when I walked around amongst them, it turned out that they're really into pain. And I really like that about them. I knew they had fierce tempers, and I knew they kind of always think they're right. But I didn't realize until I met a few how into pain they were. Like they like to fight, but at one point, they do look forward to having children, not so much for the children, but for the childbirth. Like they're very excited about the childbirth, which, is usually not the thing that you're excited about.
So funny. One fun thing about fantasy is that it allows us to put some magic back into the world, and I mean that literally, in the pages of fantasy, but metaphorically as well. In a world where we are so science driven and we are answering more and more questions about the world around us every day. It can appear sometimes that there's just nothing awe-inspiring about the world anymore. How fun is it to create things that are just unexplainable from the our vantage point?
Oh, it is. It's very fun. That's one of the reasons that I love reading. And, since I was a child, I've always thought that this world that we live in is just so dull. I'm still really irritated that there are no unicorns. And like I would still, even at this age, I would love to, fall through a portal of some kind, as long as I could get back. I mean, some portals suck. Don't touch that Hellraiser box. You know what I'm saying? But yeah.
So the new book is called Five Dark Fates. What does that title allude to?
The title alludes to the fact that I had numbered my series out of order and just backed myself into a corner. So when it was just the first two books, Three Dark Crowns and One Dark Throne, it wasn't a big deal that they were out of order because there were only two. You could figure it out. But when we expanded the series and I named the third volume Two Dark Reigns, people started to get pissed because now the series went 3-1-2 and it was confusing. So when it came time to title the fourth book, everybody was expecting it to be Four Dark Somethings, but I just decided to be a dick and go with five. I mean, it made more sense story-wise too, but yeah. There
So funny. That's so
was no
funny.
winning at that point. Either I had
Right.
one, two, three, four completely out of order, or I had one, two, three, five, and it wouldn't have made that much of a difference. So I like the number five better too.
That's amazing. We talked earlier about how depressing it can be for you, the writer, and coming to the end of a series like this, and you have spent so much time with these characters in this world. The island, all of this stuff. But for those of us that are readers that have been following along, we have become very invested in these characters as well. When you as the writer know that there's an audience out there, and there's a big audience, these were New York Times best-selling books, you know there's a big audience out there waiting to see what you are going to do with it. Does that expectation become almost crippling at times? How am I going to end this so that everyone is happy, or do you even care about readers' happiness at this point?
It wasn't, the story is the boss. When I was writing this, I mean, I wrote it really slowly because I didn't want to let it go. But when I wrote Five Dark Fates, I was only beholden to the characters and seeing them through to their ends, whatever those ends may be. It was a little bit freeing knowing two things. One, that you're never going to please everybody with an ending. I don't care who you are. I don't care how popular the series is. There are going to be, you're not, you, everybody has their hopes for how it's going to turn out, and they're all different. So that was kind of freeing in a sense. Like, I knew there were going to be people that really hate how it turns out, and there was nothing I could do about it. Because if I wrote it their way, there would be an equal number of people who would hate the way that I did it then. So it really didn't matter as long as the story ended true. And also, like, particularly with this series, it really seemed like there was a wide variety of favorite characters, favorite and hated. Nobody seemed to be able to agree. I meet people at events and one person will, I love Katarine. Oh, she's so wonderful. I hope nothing happens to her. And the next person will be like, I hate Katarine. Could you kill her right now, please? Like yeah. So that was also, comforting and scary. Knowing that that's the way that the readers were splitting.
These books have found a home all over the world and have been translated into multiple languages. How does that make you feel to know that the books have had a broader reach than maybe you ever imagined?
Yeah, that it's strange. I've got all these editions on my bookshelf that I can't read. And like, I love it. I love seeing the different book designs and the different cover designs. Yeah, it's really cool, and I really like hearing from foreign readers about how they liked it or stuff like that. It wasn't something that I really thought about when I was starting out. I mean, when I was an aspiring writer and trying to get something published for the first time, I could never have imagined anything like this. So yeah, it's still pretty weird.
Well, it's really a testament to how timeless these stories are, and I guess in a way, fantasy in general is one of those genres that really can reach across boundaries, because we all have these legendary stories. We all, talk about magical places and people and things like that. I think that's one thing that I love about fantasy is that we all, dream of fantastical people and places.
Yeah. And I don't understand, I don't understand the kind of stigma about reading fantasy. Like it's just too geeky or something. Like every once in a while, a big fantasy will come along and blow fantasy into the mainstream. Lord of the Rings did it, and a Game of Thrones certainly did it. And all of a sudden, reading fantasy is okay. Reading fantasy is cool. But I always thought it was cool, so I don't get it.
Well, when the idea for this series came to you, do you remember what you were working on before this came along, and do you find yourself kind of back to that blank slate space, again, thinking about new series and new characters?
Well, I'm in the middle of my 2021 book right now. I'm taking a year off because I've put out a book a year since 2010, a book a year and sometimes plus a novella and short stories. So I'm taking next year pretty much completely off so I can catch up and so I can switch gears from the Three Dark Crown series and kind of shake off my sadness for losing it and the girls and everything. But I'm pretty deep into my new work now, and it's good. It's exciting. I always enjoy the writing. The writing is always my favorite part. I love the creative process. It's a big shift. It's a spree killing book. So it's based off. It's like Natural Born Killers meets Interview with the Vampire. It's based off of the Heartland spree killings of Charlie Starkweather and Carolyn Fugate and the mass murder at the Clutter Farmhouse, which was like profiled in Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. So it's but there's also a supernatural twist. So it's definitely a shift. And then I sold another series. Another fantasy series that's going to start up in 2022. And that one will actually feature a queen of Fenburn. So a queen from Three Dark Crowns, not any of the main queens, but it's somebody whose name has been mentioned. And that's just my way of, well, one, she fits in the story, but two, not letting go. I'm really good at this, not letting go stuff, I guess.
Provocative. I can't wait to see what you do with that. Are you still surprised when a new story idea comes to you, and the way that sort of one little kernel of an idea grows into this whole other thing? Do you ever come to expect the creative process, or is it still magic to you?
No, it's still magic. I'm not one of those writers who has a lot of ideas to choose from, and I'm very envious of the ones who do, who have great ideas, and they're like, do I want to write this one or do I want to write this one? Maybe I'll send my publisher proposals for all five, and we'll just choose which one we all like best. I don't have that. So I have about one or two decent ideas every few years, and if my publisher doesn't like them, we're all screwed because that's all I've got. Luckily, it's worked out so far. The books that I'm working on now have been in my head for one has been in my head longer than Three Dark Crowns. I just wasn't ready to write it. And the other one has grown in such a strange way. Like they're like worms. Like that sounds gross, but
I know what you mean.
yeah, like it pops into your head and then you think, oh, that's an interesting thought. Or it's not even idea, really. It's just like, a musing. And then that musing, something else will add to it and something else will add to it. And before you know it, you've got like this little concept. And then sometimes those concepts don't even stay. But, the good ones, they just keep on worming their way through your head until it's a thing. Like it's a book, it's a world, it's a story. And that's how I know I have to write it, if it makes it that far. Because I'm continually trying to forget them. I really am.
When you have a story or a series that has political overtones, like the Three Dark Crowns, I mean, this is definitely a political story as much as it is a, fantastical magic story. Some writers, definitely put their own feelings about current events and couch it in fantasy, but it's not very well hidden. And some people do a really good job of taking kind of general concepts of how we treat each other and how the world works. And it's couched in the fantasy, and we can take things away from it, but it's not heavy-handed and preachy. Do you ever come across things like that where you're like, oh, this would be a great time to explore topic, A or whatever? Or does that sort of real world meshing with your fantasy world, does that ever come up?
I think I'm aware of when those opportunities exist, or I'm aware of when I am exploring an issue, but when I'm actually writing it, I'm not terribly present. Like I'm very much in the story, so I'm not distantly layering things in on purpose. If things are there, do you know what I mean? Like it's it was really nice to work within this matriarchal society because I could work with an entire cast of women who had different aims, different goals, different ambitions, different personalities, strengths, weaknesses, good moments, bad moments, different levels of power, and not have them worry about any gender expectations. Like that was really freeing, actually. And it was nice to see, to be able to work with women in positions of power and not have to explain why they were there. Like that was just a natural thing. Women had always been in positions of power, so it was very normal to see them there. And there wasn't this question of, oh, well, she's there because she's a real high-riding bitch, or, she's there because, yeah, I didn't have to do any of that. And it was really great. And I'm gonna miss the matriarchy a lot. And I don't know if, some of that probably did stem over some 2016 stuff where it just seemed to me to become apparent that, we aren't as used to seeing women in leadership roles as maybe I thought we were. But it was not, it wasn't an overt or an I didn't put it in there on purpose. It was just, it happened to be. I made the island matriarchal because a beehive is matriarchal. And
Sure.
that's where the story came from. I mean, it's an island ruled by queens. It felt very natural that it would be a matriarchal society.
Well, and it's so nice and refreshing that it just is that way. And that's the story we inherit. That's the world we delve into. And in some ways you're like, well, I saw it happen in Kandara's book. This is perfectly natural. Why
Yeah.
can't we explore, something like this? And I love that it just is and doesn't require, like you said, having to shoehorn all of our expectations and all of that into there. It's fantastic.
I yeah, and I mean it's not perfect. It's not some feminine utopia. We're still humans. Women are still humans, and
Right.
anyone human is going to make a ton of mistakes and oftentimes be quite terrible. So, yeah.
Well, the fourth book, Five Dark Fates, this closes out this story. And I know you said that you're going to take us back there in a couple of years, to the world, but not necessarily in this story. What are you hoping that readers, are left with when they finish this book, Five Dark Fates?
I hope that they're glad they came on the journey. I really hope that they're happy that they hung out for four books, and I hope they feel satisfied. That's all I can hope for. I hope that they feel it ended in the way, maybe the only way that it could have.
Love that. Love that. The new book, Five Dark Fates, closes out the Three Dark Crowns series. It's available everywhere now. Hardback, Kindle edition, audiobook. There's a link to it in the show notes of this episode. Kindara, if folks are just getting started on the series and want to know more about you and everything that you do, is there a place where they can connect with you online?
Yeah, I have a website, kandarablake.com, and I try to update that news blog as often as I can, which usually ends up being once a year. I'm on Twitter, and I try to answer as many of my mentions as possible. I'm on Instagram, where I flash pictures of my pets quite often. Yesterday it was my dog's 5th birthday and I made them cupcakes. So that's on my feed right now. My Twitter and my Instagram are both just Kendara Blake, so you're easily searchable. And I'm also on Facebook, but I don't have like an author page. I just have a personal one. But if you friend me, I'll friend you back as long as you're not really inappropriate.
Nice. We'll put links to all that in the show notes. Kendara, I'm a huge fan of everything that you do, and we're going to send everybody to pick up their copy of the series that's now complete. And thank you for all that you've done.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back. And who knows, maybe we'll chat again in a couple of years when you're well past your 1,000th show.
I look forward to it. Thanks to Kendara Blake for joining me today on Author Stories. Be sure to click the links in the show notes to pick up a copy of her books on Amazon.com. Now stay tuned for an audiobook clip from Richard Gleaves, the Jason Crane series.
What in the name of Carl Sagan was he doing in the cemetery on Halloween? What was he thinking? He whirled, expecting the Headless Horseman himself to be waiting on the road ahead. Or was he lurking behind? He wanted to run, but now the bridge ahead worried him. Doesn't the horseman haunt bridges? Could he avoid crossing it somehow? It terrified him. Why? It was just a stupid bridge. The gloom beneath could have been the lair of a troll. Billy Goat's Gruff. Mama used to read that. The troll waits beneath for the fattest, sweetest goat. Jason thought he saw something on the far end of the bridge, a shape of some sort. He stepped onto the bridge and gripped the knotty railing. He felt the ground drop away beneath as he edged forward. His eyes remained on the shape. It's nothing. It's nothing. Is it nothing? No troll attacked him as he reached the other shore. The looming shape was only a stupid stairwell opposite the bridge that climbed up the hill and into the main cemetery. He turned left and ran, admitting defeat and letting the fear take him over. He ran southward down the long, dark road. His initial burst of adrenaline ran its course and he slowed, then walked again, limping a little. Headstones slipped past on the right. He still had enough light that he caught his reflection occasionally in the polished stone. He looked very young and very thin. He could feel his vulnerability as he walked along. He grew aware of his own body, the touch of his starchy dress shirt and his jacket and the soft weight of his backpack. He saw himself reflected in the headstones, just a container of warm fluids, flimsy work for a blade or a hoof or a sword. He felt shatterable and transient, and his next breath was not guaranteed, oh no. The leaves made a faint oceanic rustle all around. The insects sang their three-note songs. Jason Crane, Jason Crane, Jason Crane. Jason sang a wretched pop song as he walked. Something about having no self-control and no bitches and not enough money. He sang it softly, absent-mindedly, as if reciting a psalm. He passed Reese, Finnerton, Bane, Ekdahl, Forrest, Black, Small. There. He saw the gate at the end of the road. But the gate would be locked, he remembered. He would have to climb the embankment and cross over the churchyard. He could see the spire of the church above and the weather vane spinning against the sky. He would rather climb this gate than face that churchyard, but the spikes on top made leaping the fence impossible. Okay, just be quick. Something caught his ear, a brittle, clipping sound. He scanned the crest above and saw a horse silhouetted among the graves. It looked to be tied to a branch of the locust tree. He had heard its hooves as it shifted from foot to foot. It rustled somehow. His breath caught. He forced himself to be calm and rational. Some Halloween thing, maybe, for some event. He found the stairs and ascended, sideways, ready to bolt if necessary. He watched the horse, but when he neared the top he saw the rider, standing upon the shallow depression of the horseman's grave. The figure was motionless, a dim shape that absorbed light and gave nothing back. He could make out the shape of the boots and the legs and two arms held away from the body, palms down. Just a man? But the cape of the thing was not normal. It contorted painfully, twisting in the air even though the wind wasn't blowing. It wrung itself and billowed and whipped slowly, as if the figure wore a wave torn from a black ocean. And above its shoulders, is he headless? Is he headless?